We're 17 days away from the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, June 9th and Saturday, June 10th in Collinsville, Illinois. Register today at issuesetc.org.
This is not a battle between different faiths, different sects, or different civilizations. This is a battle between barbaric criminals who seek to obliterate human life and decent people, all in the name of religion. People that want to protect life and want to protect their religion. This is a battle between good and evil. A better future is only possible if your nations drive out the terrorists and drive out the extremists. Drive them out. Drive them out of your places of worship. Drive them out of your communities. Drive them out of your holy land and drive them out of this earth.
That's President Donald Trump in a speech Sunday to the Arab Islamic American Summit. Strong words from a U.S. president spoken to allies in the Islamic world and others. Of course, what follows shortly thereafter is another terrorist attack in Manchester, England. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in live this Tuesday afternoon, the 23rd of May. Mark and Molly Hemingway join us to talk about President Trump's Middle East tour, his meeting on Wednesday scheduled with Pope Francis, and impeachment rumors at home. A little bit later, Robert Spencer of Jihad Watch will be our guest. We'll talk about the Islamic State claiming responsibility for a bombing at that pop concert in Manchester, England. There's a St. Louis abortion sanctuary law. We'll be talking about it with Sarah Pitlick of the Thomas More Society. Pastor Tom Baker joins us to teach a Sunday school lesson on John's vision of heaven in Revelation 21 and 22. And it's part 11 of our series on Christian devotion with Pastor Brian Wolfmiller. Martin Luther's fourfold strand of prayer. We'll be talking about Thanksgiving in the last half hour of Issues Etc. Joining us to talk about the president's Middle East tour, his meeting on Wednesday with Pope Francis, and impeachment rumors, Mark Hemingway, senior writer for the Weekly Standard. Mark, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Glad to be back.
And Molly Hemingway, Fox News contributor and senior editor at The Federalist. Molly, welcome to you.
Great to be here with you.
Mark, some people say that the traveling that the president is doing right now is kind of a wag the dog. Some pundits are suggesting that this is simply designed to distract from the impeachment rumors and the domestic trouble that President Trump seems to be having. What are your thoughts?
I think that's a bit ludicrous, and it's not like you put together a trip like this on the spur of the moment. And every president wants to make a big foreign trip initially to sort of like announce their presence on the foreign stage, you know, as a world leader. And on top of that, I mean, there are obvious problems with terrorism and other things that were addressed in the Middle East. And I think that there was some positive moves made. I mean, it wasn't just that Trump, you know, did some, you know, fly-in in the Middle East. I mean, he addressed, I believe, 50 majority Muslim countries or representatives from them. So, I mean, it was a very significant event that, you know, he went and met these people on their own turf, and they, you know, hammered out some, you know, important things like this new counterterrorism center in Saudi Arabia. So I think that's a bit overstated, but, you know, at the same time, you know, of course trips like this are symbolic to some degree.
Molly, what are your thoughts there on the way that the president's Middle East tour is being spun here in the media?
Well, I don't think the media have a lot going for them in how they're spinning pretty much anything these days. This is a very significant trip. This is major news, what's happening. President Trump has met with Muslim leaders, Jewish leaders. He'll be meeting with Christian leaders. There is real significance to understanding the religious nature of conflict in the Middle East. Mark mentioned the counterterrorism center that's been set up, but this is a lot about not just reshaping the region to revisit the power that Saudi Arabia holds versus Iran, but also about shaping a brand new foreign policy, one that is different from the past 20 years of both Democratic and Republican foreign policy that has been heavy on intervention and sort of quick to go to intervention. And President Trump had a speech where he talked about the need for people to take care of their own problems and have responsibility for their own problems, that the U.S. is happy to help, They won't be lecturing, which was sort of a feature of the Obama era, and they won't be quick to invade, which was a feature of both the Obama and Bush eras. And so this is a real radical shift, and this is real news as opposed to whatever is the distraction of the moment at the in the Washington press corps.
And Mark, this comes, of course, in the context and with the 24-hour news cycle, it's easy to forget that it wasn't that long ago that Trump was being vilified for airstrikes in Syria. I think it was either you or another guest who said that that essentially reset Middle Eastern diplomacy and policy. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. I mean, and this is a further extension of that reset. In the Obama administration, their entire goal in foreign policy was to shift the balance of power in the Middle East away from traditional Sunni allies like Saudi Arabia and Kuwait and, you know, UAE and Qatar and all those other countries that are, you know, majority Sunni, toward, you know, Iran, which is, you know, pretty much just one country, but it is very large and very powerful, and it, you know, it is a Shia country. And so by meeting with so many Muslim nations at once in Saudi Arabia, which is sort of the seat of Sunni power and influence, I mean, he really further cemented that, you know, notion that there's a new foreign policy head in town and things are going to be very different than they were the last 8 years. Although, again, I would stress that Saudi Arabia and these other Sunni countries are the traditional American allies in the region. And what was really anomalous was the Iran deal that Obama tried to, the Iran deal that Obama set up in Iran with the nuclear program there and all of his efforts. I mean, it was really Obama that was really the sort of extraordinarily different approach, not so much what Trump is doing now. Trump is just getting things back in order.
The timing, Molly, with the bombing in England yesterday seems to be, I don't even know what to call it. You can't call something like that perfect, but it does highlight the ongoing need for a Middle East policy and diplomacy, doesn't it?
Well, it does, and that was a big focus of the speech that was given in Riyadh on Sunday, that this is a shared fight against Islamic extremism, and to have yet another bombing of civilians right during this trip really does reinforce that message. One of the things President Trump was trying to say was this is something not just for Western countries, but that Muslim countries are also dealing with the problems of this extremist ideology, and that they need to be the ones to take care of it, and that they need to step up and have positions of leadership or use their positions of leadership, since they are much better suited to combating this than Americans or other Westerners might be.
What's very interesting about this, that this is, again, yet another big break from the Obama administration. You remember the Obama administration, I mean, they wouldn't even, you know, it's not just they would go so far as to say radical Islamist terrorism or whatever the strong language Trump was talking on the campaign trail. He's backed away from that. It's all, they would only refer to terrorism in the context of violent extremism. And in fact, they have this incredibly academic approach to terrorism called social movement theory that basically posited that you had to address all these broader political and social conditions in the Middle East in order to deal with terrorism, which made it very hard to address the problem from sort of a pragmatic and political perspective. Whereas Trump comes in and he doesn't lecture the Middle East, but at the same time, he's speaking intuitively on the same level. Like, they know they have problems within Islam in these countries. They know that it is rooted in certain, you know, perverse ideological contortions of Islam. And Trump just spoke directly to these nations and said, look, you know, I'm going to support you. I'm not going to, you know, get in your business, but we, you know, we need to be clear and understand that this is as much your problem as it is our problem in the West. And so let's work together on a government to government level to deal with this ideological threat. And that is sort of the basis of this new counterterrorism center, which is, you know, kind of an exciting development in that regard, but it is certainly a break from the Obama administration.
This was one aspect of the speech that was extremely disappointing, though, is this thing that President Trump did that both of his predecessors have done, which I jokingly call theologian-in-chief, where they weigh in on the theology of Muslim extremists, and then in so doing, invariably mess it up. So they like to say that these Muslim extremists are not following religion or that they're not being true to their God or whatnot. And this is really inappropriate rhetoric, particularly for Islamist extremists, which, whatever else you want to say about them, they actually do have scholars and they do have clerics who guide them in their thinking. And to dismiss it as not real, I I mean, it's been one of these things that you hear all Western leaders do since 9/11. They disparage these religious views rather than fully engage with them. And that is something that I think people thought President Trump wouldn't do. So to see him falling into these same unnecessary traps, I mean, I see why people think they're a good idea to sort of dismiss the religious concerns of these radical extremists, but their religious views are real and they need to be dealt with and they can't be wished away just because they are bad religious views, basically.
That backing off that that Mark had mentioned, is that part of what you're talking about here, Molly? That on
No.
the campaign trail, he was pretty clear about the role of Islam in terrorism, that it played a role. Wasn't specific, but he was clear.
No, I mean, that's actually not what I'm talking about. His rhetoric during the campaign was extreme against the problem caused by Islamist extremism. And then his speech in Riyadh was very tempered because he was speaking to a Muslim audience. And that's inconsistent, but kind of understandably so. What I'm talking about is when he actually addressed the religious views of these extremists, he said that they weren't real, that these religious views weren't real and they weren't valid. And what I'm saying is, this is a common trope trotted out by political leaders, and it's just simply not true. And our intelligence agencies also copy this, and they act like these religious views aren't real. And I'm saying it's very difficult to fight an enemy when you don't understand what motivates them. It would be like trying to fight communists without understanding the economic system that they were attempting to promulgate. It's just foolish. And you don't say it's not real economy or it's not real philosophy. It's a real philosophy, even if you disagree with it. And you simply need to understand it before you do anything else. And we are at a disadvantage by our refusal to take seriously the very real religious views that motivate these people.
And Todd, just to answer your question a little more directly, because this did come up a lot in the analysis of Trump's speech in Riyadh, which is that on the campaign trail, he made a big deal out of saying radical Islamist terrorism, which was something the Obama administration refused to say. And it got to the point where Hillary Clinton was basically forced into using the same terminology, because after 8 years of the Obama administration, was so divorced from ideology as a motive for terrorism that they would only refer to violent extremism. They would never refer to it as Islamic terrorism or Islamic extremism. It was only violent extremism. And the language made no sense because, you know, extremism has to be, you know, extreme in relation to something. And the Obama administration just, you know, they were fumbling all over themselves in rather embarrassing ways to avoid discussing that there was any religious component or ideological component to terrorism at all. And there was a famous incident after the Charlie Hebdo massacre where I believe Josh Earnest said something to the effect of, well, it's a shame they all had to die for being, you know, in some random place. And there's nothing random about the location of that massacre. So I think people made a lot out of the fact that Trump did temper his language speaking to Muslim audience, but he still referred specifically to Islamic terrorism. He referred specifically to ideology as the root cause of terrorism. And that is, in fact, the underlying purpose of this new counterterrorism center. I mean, it is a massive shift away from the approach of the Obama administration. And I think that a lot of public polling and other things would suggest that people were fed up with that Obama approach and could see that it was not terribly effective, walking around on eggshells, trying to pretend that, you know, not offending Muslims or dignifying the root causes of terrorists would make them go away. It just didn't work, and Trump is trying something new, and I think it's more in line with where the mainstream American people are on this issue.
Mark Hemingway is our guest, senior writer for the Weekly Standard, along with Molly Hemingway, Fox News contributor and senior editor at The Federalist. We're talking about President Trump. We move from the Middle East to the meeting with Pope Francis on Wednesday and impeachment rumors after the break.
The 50 days of Easter, sacred music for the world. LutheranPublicRadio.org. Listen 24/7 to sacred music for the Easter season. LPR, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Parents, Parents, you know the church is persecuted, even when you don't feel it or see it. But how can you prepare your children for a post-Christian world where that persecution is increasingly obvious? Read the May issue of The Lutheran Witness to learn more about catechesis, persecution, and why it's your job, not your pastor's, to train your children in the faith. Visit cph.org/trylutheranwitness for a special offer, $6.99 for 6 digital or print issues. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran perspective.
Your comprehensive source for information, teaching, and truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois offers ACT, SAT, and PSAT test prep, scholarship application classes, college and career counseling, and more. Hi, this is Lori Konski, president of College Preparation Station. We have helped our students obtain more than $7 million in tuition scholarships in 12 years. Find out more at cpsprep.com. Let us help you create a vision and find your future. The College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois, cpsprep.com.
The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod celebrates and affirms life from the time of conception until natural death and every time in between. For this reason, LCMS Life Ministry is a program singularly devoted to upholding the sanctity of human life, both in our church body and the culture at large. Life Ministry provides educational materials, hosts conferences, and works closely with allies such as Lutherans for Life. For more information, visit lcms.org/life and follow LCMS Life Ministry on Facebook.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about President Donald Trump, an update on his visits, both foreign and his problems domestic. Mark Hemingway of the Weekly Standard, Molly Hemingway of Fox News and The Federalist are our guests. Molly, there's this planned meeting between Donald Trump and Pope Francis, being portrayed in the media as kind of a showdown between reasonable progressivism and President Trump. What are your thoughts?
Well, it'll be interesting to see how this meeting goes. The last time we talked about the Pope and Donald Trump, it was when the Pope intervened in the discussions of the U.S. election to say that he answered a question. He didn't specifically state Trump, but he said something about how you shouldn't build walls and that building walls is bad. And so everyone thought this was a really big smackdown from the leader of the Roman Catholic Church against a Republican candidate. And it turned out to have very little effect on the election. In fact, I think that Donald Trump went on to win the South Carolina primary after this was said. But I'm sure they will have a very cordial meeting, a very nice meeting, and I think both of those leaders could use a lot of training in when to speak and how to speak. And the Pope has really gotten out over his skis sometimes in how he talks about these things. For instance, there's no clear scriptural guidance on whether protecting your borders is Christian or not Christian. Well, actually, there is some guidance, and it wouldn't be in the direction of necessarily not having borders. So it'll be interesting to see if they discuss anything in particular.
Mark, what do you think about this meeting? I mean, it is a historic meeting. Presidents don't meet with popes every day.
Yeah, although, as Molly said, it is kind of interesting. Yeah, I mean, they are coming at things from a very different perspective politically, but in a lot of ways, this current pope is kind of the Trump of popes. You know, they're both very volatile personalities, and, you know, they both are very colorful. And so what that means when, you know, these two men walk into a room, it could go very poorly or it could go very well. You know, who knows? One thing that would be interesting, you know, the Pope typically doesn't meet for terribly long periods of time with world leaders. I think, you know, I remember people making a big deal out of the fact that when Barack Obama met with the Pope in 2014, their meeting lasted 50 minutes, and, you know, that was supposedly a sign of a good meeting, whereas I think a year or two ago when the Pope met with Stephen Harper, then the President of Canada, it was only like a 10-minute meeting, and everyone was like going, oh, well, gosh, that must have, you know, not gone very well. But, you know, at the end of the day, the Vatican is not a hugely influential voice in many respects, even over its own church body, which is, at least in a narrow sort of political sense, which is not, I'm not trying to downplay the importance of the meeting. So there's not a whole lot to lose or gain, I think, riding on this meeting. I think it's an interesting part of the meeting simply because, you know, remember how I said that these trips tend to be symbolic? Well, you know, that he went to Riyadh and met with 50 Muslim countries, then he went to Israel, and now he's meeting with the Pope. So you're hitting the world's three big major religions on this trip, and there's a nice symbolism to that.
And I might point out that while in Israel, he visited the Church of the Holy Sepulchre and also the Church of the Nativity in Bethlehem. So it's not just that he's meeting with the Pope. The Christian angle of this trip isn't just that papal visit.
Molly, let's talk about the, well, we're calling them impeachment rumors. I noticed in reading the press, especially going into the weekend, some of the commentary that was made in the news might as well have started with, well, now that President Trump is going to be impeached, is it a foregone conclusion that that's where this is headed?
Yes, according to D.C. media and those voices on Twitter, I believe the impeachment has already occurred, and I think he's already been ousted from office. In the real world, where you actually have to have a crime that was committed or some real actual public movement toward impeachment, there is no imminent threat of the same. I think it is worth noting that the actual bar that has been set by the media in their hysteria on this Russia story is that they have been pushing stories to prove the point that Donald Trump is quite literally a stooge of Vladimir Putin, so a traitor sitting in the White House. And that is the best way to understand their hysteria, is that they believe this Russia conspiracy. Not, and by Russia conspiracy, I don't mean that Russia hacked the DNC or John Podesta's emails, which we have reason to believe happened. I'm saying this conspiracy that Trump is an actual traitor. That is what they've been pushing. That is the bar that needs to be met. And I have a feeling that they might not meet that bar.
Mark, do they have a point to make when it comes to Flynn, when it comes to the firing of James Comey, when it comes to what may be a conversation between Comey and President Trump asking him to lay off the Flynn investigation?
Well, look, there are, you know, plenty of reasons to be worried about Trump's conduct and some of the things that he's done. You know, there's a lot of smoke here. We don't know if there's a big fire behind it. And yes, there are investigations proceeding, and you know, certainly I don't think we should stop those investigations. I mean, we should, as citizens, know all the facts here. But, I mean, this has really gotten way out of control. Last Friday, I wandered into a 7-Eleven, and, you know, in the D.C. area is so insane that even the 7-Eleven has a giant television behind the register playing CNN. And they had this big CNN cry on that said something about impeachment, and they had six different talking heads on. I mean, it was like in different boxes on the television. It was like George Orwell reimagined the Brady Bunch. And they're just going at it full time about this impeachment stuff. And it's insane. I mean, I agree there's lots of troubling stuff here. But can anyone tell me what Trump has actually done? What we have are supposedly a grand conspiracy with Russia that hasn't been proven, and a bunch of alarming statements sans context that have been provided to us largely by anonymous leaks and that we don't know the full truth of. So we need to let a normal, orderly investigation into these matters proceed, and it needs not to be accompanied by hysteria. Otherwise, it's just completely poisoning the well. But, you know, it's also, I think, frustrating to a lot of voters who think that Trump should be at least allowed a chance to try and govern without having his entire presidency undermined from the get-go. Again, I realize there are plenty of things that Trump himself has done that make him his own worst enemy. And if he could just have a modicum of discipline and focus, he'd be in a much better place. But that doesn't change the fact that the attacks against him are largely unhinged as well. And it is just, I think, beyond frustrating for a lot of people that this is where we are. I mean, we have serious problems in this country, and politics are just getting in the way of anyone who tries to do anything, you know, be it, you know, Trump or anyone else, especially if you're conservative. The Obama years were kind of remarkable in this regard. I still don't know why Barack Obama's administration gave more than 2,000 guns to Mexican criminal organizations, resulting in the deaths of dozens of people. I did not see impeachment hysteria over that, even though they did eventually hold the Attorney General in contempt of Congress over it. You know, four people died in Benghazi, and there's, you know, all manner of evidence showing that members of the Obama administration, you know, lied in the aftermath out of political consideration for the impending election in 2 months. Again, you didn't see an impeachment hysteria accompanying these things, and these were actual politically motivated decisions that resulted in the deaths of people. But again, all we have about...
Or the use of the IRS is to target political enemies?
Right.
Leader of the IRS pled the fifth rather than testify. We again did not see the hysteria.
We go on and on. All we have with Trump are a bunch of worrisome statements and a grand conspiracy with Russia that isn't even close to being proven.
Molly, with regard to the Democratic, the loyal opposition here, what seems to be lost on the press is that if Donald Trump had committed an impeachable offense that could be proven and that he could be impeached, the next in line is Mike Pence, not Hillary Clinton. They still don't get, the press doesn't get what they want out of this election. It doesn't undo the election in any real sense.
Well, I would disagree with that in a bit, which is that the war between the media and Trump is extremely personal, and just to get the head of Donald Trump would be vindication in the eyes of the media, who were humiliated by their horrifically bad coverage of the 2016 campaign. And rather than accept the results of that election, they've decided to become propaganda arms of the anti-Trump movement. And so if they were to get him defeated, that would be a huge victory. And Mike Pence, whatever else you want to say about him, is not Donald Trump. He is a somewhat conservative, or, you know, at least speaks as a conservative frequently. Whether he follows through on that is another issue. But he's a very establishment Republican type person. So that would be within the normal order of things. I think the big war going on in D.C. is between the establishment and Donald Trump, who is a threat to the established order, and that's why you see people in the media joining with people on both sides of the aisle, as well as the bureaucracy, which is refusing to accept the election, and they're all working together to fight Trump in a way that I don't think they would fight another Republican, even if they would also fight another Republican.
Having said what Molly just said, I would just want to add that I don't think the media and the Washington establishment, the foreign policy blob, and all the powers that be around here get what's going on here, which is to say that Trump is symptomatic. Trump is the result of a populace that is fed up with Washington to the point that they will willingly elect Donald Trump if they think that we will cause the establishment angst and cause them to reevaluate things and question their life decisions. The media can get rid of Donald Trump, but they are not going to get rid of this unhappiness with what's going on in D.C. And until the people that are running this town get right with middle America, they're going to be stuck with this problem for a long time to come. And I really think that they really think that Trump is some like unique creature rather than a manifestation of a larger problem. They just don't get it yet. That, you know, getting rid of Trump is not going to solve their problem, and there will be peace in the Acela corridor once more.
You can follow Mark Hemingway on Twitter at Heminator, that's Heminator, and Molly at MZ Hemingway. Mark Hemingway is senior writer for the Weekly Standard. Mark, thank you.
Thank you.
Molly Hemingway is Fox News contributor and senior editor at The Federalist. Molly, thank you.
Thank you.
On the other side of the break, we're going to be talking with Robert Spencer about the Islamic State claiming responsibility for the bombing at a pop concert in England. Whether or not they actually are responsible, no one knows, because the Islamic State claims responsibility for almost every terrorist attack. The question for Robert Spencer of Jihad Watch when we come back from this break is, does it matter if they're responsible? What can be done about this kind of terrorism? Even one, as the press is calling him, lone wolf Islamic terrorist causing this much rampage and this much death and destruction in an otherwise peaceful nation. We'll talk about that with Robert Spencer after this. How did one of the world's most famous atheists become one of its most famous Christians? Find out in the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for May, From Atheism to Christianity, The Story of C.S. Lewis. It's written by regular guest Dr. Joel Heck, From Atheism to Christianity is published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number, 1-800-325-3040, or browse before you buy at issuesetc.org. From Atheism to Christianity.
Confessional, liturgical, sacramental. Lutheran Church of the Redeemer is located in Columbus, Georgia, right next to Fort Benning, Georgia, off of Exit 7 on I-185. Come receive our Lord Jesus' gifts of forgiveness and grace every Sunday in the Divine Service. For more information, visit our website, RedeemerColumbusGA.org.
If you're like me, you remember when education was about the basic skills of reading, writing, and arithmetic, and about reading great literature and history that gave our kids models of what it is to be a good person. Memoria Press's Classical Christian Curriculum is bringing this kind of education back. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
Are you tired of working nights, weekends, and odd hours trying to cover your bases at home just to make ends meet? At the Cleaning Authority, we call that the multi-job shuffle, and we want to end that for you right now. We'll train you in our proven, efficient cleaning methods, and you'll be partnered to work in pre-qualified homes. Call 314-416-8117 and walk away from the multi-job shuffle with a future in our St. Louis office, 314-416-8117.
Smartest listeners in radio. You're listening to Issues Etc.
The fake news wars that we're experiencing right now are not going to end soon.
Terry Mattingly on his presentation at this summer's Issues Etc. Making the Case conference, making the case for news discernment.
We're actually seeing a war to define what is and what isn't news. This whole thing is about the purpose of journalism and whether the classic American model of the press, with its whole emphasis on balance and fairness, is going to survive the internet age. What we'll be talking about is where savvy readers can go to get their news. We're also going to ask, what happens to American public discourse if we all keep on clicking on news sources that only tell us what we want to hear?
You can meet and hear Terry Mattingly June 9th and 10th at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference in Collinsville, Illinois. For more information, just look for the Making the Case logo at our homepage, issuesetc.org, or call 618-223-8385.